Welcome to the Compassionate Leaders Circle podcast. For thousands of years, the sages have known that compassion is a powerful force for good. In the last two decades, compassion scholars caught up with these sages, proving that there is an ROI to building loving communities and businesses. This podcast features leaders who can teach us about the power of compassion.
I'm so delighted. I have the co-founders of Space Hero with me today, Deborah Sass and Thomas Reamer. I'd love for you to start with, you both have really interesting backstories and life stories, and we're not going to be able to tell the whole life story, but I'd love to start with sort of the short story of who you are and where you're sitting today, and I'll have you each go on that. And then I'd like you both to tell the story of how you came together. But why don't we start with Deborah, just to tell us a little bit about you and where you are today.
Hi, Laurel, and thank you so much for having us. Yes, I'm Deborah Sass. I'm the co-founder of Space Hero, and I am sitting currently on a farm in Ibiza. And for your audience members that don't know where Ibiza is, then they have never been to one of the world's biggest nightclubs or one of the world's best beaches. Ibiza is in Spain and it's an island. It's considered the party island of the world. But as you can probably tell, I'm maybe past my due date. Anyway, I have been living on a farm, growing my own vegetables with a few small farm animals and a couple of very cute Jack Russells called Buzz and Armstrong. And those are my children. I'm also an auntie. So I had a normal upbringing, good family. I wasn't able to go to university. I wasn't really interested in going to university, but I loved high school. And I was one of the student counselors at my local high school in Perth, Western Australia. As my father affectionately said, Perth, the end of the earth. Anyway, so I got into media very early on in the piece. I've had no formal education. I don't have any letters after my name. I came from what I said to you before we started recording, the English equivalent of the projects. So it's a council estate, which is given as housing to people who can't afford to buy their own house or perhaps pay a normal rent. Very happy childhood, lots of racism, but I never really paid much attention. I figured from a very young age that if you could charm somebody and be kind to them and actually show the right intentions, that people normally left you alone. And it also grew into what I now consider my leadership qualities and my ability to empathize with the billionaires we deal with to the interns we deal with. So I think that's a good start.
It's a beautiful start. Thank you, Deborah. Thomas, how about you? Where are you sitting? And tell us a little bit about your background.
Thank you, Laurel. Thanks for having us. I'm sitting in the dark, obviously. But the wall behind me is dark. It's my farm near Berlin, Germany, where I was raised and born. And we moved outside the city like 5 years ago. Because you're at that age, right, where you know different priorities become important. And my kids are now living in the city, just as we did when we were younger, and Berlin is exactly like that. I grew up in East Berlin, which of course was under communist rule. It wasn't communism in the good word per se, but you know, they tried to establish a system with a lot of limitations. And when the wall came down, I was 18 and finished school and just ready to go and enjoy the freedom that came with it, and had an insanely brilliant decade in the 90s in Berlin. As you can imagine, it was just heaven. But due to that moment in my life, I understand system changes quite well. I understand that people who also thought that things can never change, you know, change things and embrace the change and live through the change. And that's what I can give to everybody who lives on this planet, is that change is an imminent thing and absolutely can happen at any moment. And we should never take things for granted. And that's what I can bring into the company as well. And thus, Debs and I, we are like the perfect match because we know limitations and how to overcome them.
Deborah, how did you and Thomas come together to work together? And I'd love to hear both of you talk about your vision for Space Hero.
Thomas and I have actually known each other for 17 years. We were in the same circles together. We're both serial entrepreneurs, and we both started our careers in the music business. And as you probably remember, there used to be these events and conferences and trade shows, and we used to go to all of them. And there's, I don't know, half a dozen or so all around the world. And for about a decade, Thomas and I were pretty much in the same room. Hey, how you doing? Let's get a cocktail. Who's buying what? Who's selling? All in the music tech space. So we worked with some really cool Spotify, Shazam, Apple, the studios Thomas had in his previous part. He actually was one of the first hip hop nightclub owners in East Berlin, which I think is super cool. So how Thomas and I met formally for the project, it's a very funny story and a very short story. He rang me about 4.5 years ago and he said, Deborah, I've got this global casting show that I would like to help, like you to help me run. It's going to be the biggest prize ever given out on television, a $55 million 10-day stay on the ISS. And I want you to help me run it. And I was like, I'm in. That's amazing. I've just got one question, Thomas. And he said, what? And I said, what's the ISS? And that was how Space Hero was born.
Well, I know what ISS is because my father's an engineer that worked on the Apollo program. But I can understand most people not knowing that what that is.
Very cool.
Thomas, why don't you take us a step back? Like, where did this come from and what were you attracted to by this idea?
Yeah, for a media entrepreneur, like we all are, right? This is like the ultimate culmination of everything because you always look for the biggest, best idea. And that's the one because it is the biggest prize to, at the moment, ever to be given away on television or on media. And it has the strongest and biggest challenge, right? Because space requires a very different set of skills, right, to go up there. And I think that attracted me immediately when I was hearing about this thing. It's not our idea, right? We a couple of people tried it before. Mark Burnett tried Survivor in Space. Other people tried other iterations. And I got the inspiration from a trip to Moscow where I was hawking my own little venture in the music industry, which was similar like an international casting show for a girl band, right? Called the Bricks, please don't mention that. And the Russian state television was listening to this, and the guy who runs it is quite a powerful media czar in Russia. He took me out for dinner that night and he said to me, look, we like how you think about global logistics and time zones and voting, et cetera. We always wanted to do something in a global casting show, but we didn't know how until today. And I asked, what is that? And he said, we want to send somebody to the International Space Station and, you know, give that ticket away. And that was the start of it. Of course, they didn't have anything. Nothing was prepared. We started a production company together to do this as a first iteration. And it didn't work out because simply there was no seat capacity. As you know, the shuttle program was grounded in 2011. All American astronauts that had to fly to the ISS used the capacity that Roscosmos, the Russians, had to offer. And the last space tourism, or private astronaut, as we like to call them today, went up in 2009, Guy Laliberté. And I had to shelve this thing, give back the money to the investors, you know, dissolve the company and move to China. Then another company sold that. And, you know, when I got back, that's actually the moment when SpaceX and Boeing were becoming visible, right? That's like 2015. And it became clear that there will be free seats and access capacity, so why not bring it back?
Well, I think one of the things people don't realize who aren't entrepreneurs is sometimes entrepreneurs just don't give up on the idea. And sometimes it takes years and years, you know. I think I think often the difference between an entrepreneur who succeeds and an entrepreneur who doesn't is just not giving up, because some ideas are so big, they take years and years. Someone once told me, like, if, you know, research scientists work 30 years on the same project. And I think sometimes we expect entrepreneurs to make things happen in a year, right? Or 3 years. And sometimes ideas, the big ideas, take longer. So tell me about where the project is now.
So your readers or audience members may have seen an article that Thomas and I did, our first and only until today, joint interview with the editor of Deadline, which is Variety, that organization. And we did a business announcement to the media press to talk about what we had achieved and what we wanted to do in the next steps. And we have to achieve four things before we go public. We've done three of them, and that's what the announcement was about. And those three are securing a deal, a formal relationship with NASA, that's been done some time ago, securing a ticket with a launch provider, that's also been done some time ago. And the third, which was the final piece before we did the article with Nelly, was to work and find a brilliant production company that could globally do such a big idea. And as you can appreciate, there's not so many that can do that. And we went to see all of them, the Fremantles, the Endeavors, you know, those big organizations that we've all heard of. And Propagate was the clear winner of that those conversations. So we now had the three elements. The fourth element, and which is why we did the business announcement, was to secure a distribution deal. So after that article went out, we were very lucky that the response from the global platforms, Netflix, Disney, Apple, Nat Geo, et cetera, everybody knows them. There's about eight of them in the world, came to us and we started talking formally. We've now done a number of pitches, and where we are today is in heavy or deep negotiations with several of those global platforms.
Exciting. Thomas, could you sort of paint a picture for what this show will feel like for those of us that are watching too much Netflix?
The world.
So, of course, what you will hear probably first is there is somebody that is giving away $55 million for free. And you will be like, what, you know, what's happening there? I want to check it out. And that will prompt you to download the Space Hero app, right, for free. And the app will do two things. The app will help the applicants, right, to apply. And it will help the viewers to have a very good idea of who those applicants are. And then take an action, an engagement in finding the 24 finalists that we want to see moving into the place that we call the Space Village. That application phase is 6 months long, and it's long for a deliberate, because of, you know, for certain reasons. We want to reach the globe, Laurel, and that's important to us, right? And that means we will take some time to make Space Hero popular in areas where it's harder to reach people, right? I mean, we always assume that if you have a mobile phone and Android and Apple and everything's fine, right? You just download it, done. But that's not the case, of course, in, you know, we've researched that like 65% of the planet Earth runs on other systems. And we want to cater to these systems. We want to make sure that, you know, even the slow pace that requires certain technical infrastructure requires a different pace, that we capture these people, because we really want to hear from everybody around the world. And those stories will make the first part of Space Hero, right? Because you want to hear, you know, from the guy who is living in Nigeria and has set up his own school, you know, because he thought that he could do a better service of schooling people than others, right? You want to hear from the girl that lives in Nepal, right? And comes from a middle-class family, so they have money, but still the hierarchical tradition prevents her from going to study any science, right? And you want to hear from the bored out of their mind people that have too many things in the West, and then they understand that, you know, the one thing that is missing is actually a purpose. And we can, you know, help inspire those thoughts, and they will all be captured, you know, visibly. People will tell us their stories and their background stories. They will show us their environments and how they live and talk about it. And we will feed the audience these things. So when you think about the strongest platforms on this planet, you know, they are inherently global, right? And the content that they produce is inherently global as well. So it's normal today to really, when you look at all the food programs, right, wonderful to watch because it is background story, it's social context and a cultural context from other territories on this planet. And it brings home that we are all one. So that's probably the first message that you will get as a viewer. And then you move on, you know, to the classical finale season where 24 finalists are there, 12 men, 12 women, 12 people from, you know, Western parts, let's call it that, and, you know, 12 people from Eastern parts coming together at the same point because they all have understood what it means to become a space hero. And it will make for interesting communication and conversations between these two parties, which, you know, had very different reasons for applying, you know, fame, vanity on the one hand, and, you know, becoming the next president of their country on the other, right? Because the significance for people who are the first ones of their country to fly to space is quite dramatic. And then, you know, all the other aspects of things, you know, where and how have they, you know, been growing up? You know, was there hunger? And was there a double door fridge that was always stocked, you know, all these things. And this season will unfold. It's your typical, you know, we call it wallpaper, reality TV wallpaper. But of course, with Space Hero in the mix, it's different, right? It's smart. You know, it's not about, you know, who gets the last piece of toilet paper. It is other differences and challenges. And then we will find three people in that season. And those three people will go into the proper training. And on the ramp, before the launch of the rocket that brings them to the ISS, the world will be able to choose between the three final candidates. It's going to be a dramatic life event, and it will bring together arguably the biggest crowd that has ever voted. And that's also a signal on its own. From station, you can expect a 24/7 live stream for the first time. We are working with NASA on it already and all the technical infrastructure will be immersive and interactive. So Laurel, you can take your phone and you can, you know, enter the station and then say hi to the space hero and she or he will be waving back at you. So that's quite significant too. And until the splashdown, which is the big welcoming episode that will have people glued to their, you know, screen. Is everything all right? You know, everything gone well? You know, there are these 30, 40 seconds where there's no communication between spacecraft and Earth when it runs through the atmosphere and it's burning hot. And then the hero comes out and waves to the crowds and it will conclude a journey that is a first, because whatever this person is going to say, people will believe this person, right? Because the buy-in into this person is a lot stronger and so much more than, you know, the buy-in was with you know, the professional astronauts.
I'm so excited that you're doing this and that I get to be a part of it vicariously, and I want to support you in any way I can. One of the things that intrigued me about your story is this idea of democratizing space travel. But what I also hear and what you're saying is democratizing education about space travel and the advancements that space innovation create for the world. And I also hear a huge leadership story, because you are empowering a leader. And as we have seen in our country, it's important that we empower compassionate leaders. I posted a article on Forbes today called Inaugurate, Invigorate, Celebrate Compassionate Leadership, which features Joe Biden and Kamala Harris, but also leaders in all sectors that are already working on these problems that we have as a globe. And I'm just thrilled about what you're up to and have a million questions. But I guess my question is, how do you ensure that the space hero is compassionate?
It's actually a very good question. I just want to highlight something that you just touched on. One of the passions and that invigorates Thomas and I, we've been working on this for over 4 years together. And when you said at the top of your interview, you know, what's the difference between a successful entrepreneur and a not successful entrepreneur? It really is about consistency and doing something every single day. We have never, not once, thought that this was not achievable. We've never given up. We've never given up on each other. We've never given up on ourselves. We now have a team of people all around the world. But what you were saying about space and democratizing space, it actually goes, maybe it's even simpler than that. If we think about the last big space event that was global, not discounting the brilliance of Elon Musk and what he's done in the recent times with SpaceX, but let's look at the last, like, the global thing of Apollo going to the moon. And there's never been anything that's come close to that enjoyment, excitement, inspiration. And unfortunately, what happened with STEMs from a government perspective is the intention was great to influence people to want to be scientists and technicians and, you know, engineering and maths. But it kind of went from you as a kid in any culture wanted to be an astronaut. So when you were six, everybody wanted to be an astronaut. By the time you got to 16, you were so far removed from it. And what we want to do in a very simple way is make space cool and sexy and pop culture again. Let's make space mainstream, because by making space mainstream, what you're actually doing is making available the STEMs and STEAMs initiative that has been kind of caught up in this educational curriculum. You're making it more accessible, you're making it cooler, and you're making it instead of it, and as Thomas was saying, the way that we know an audience will be engaged is because any one of us could have been that space hero, because there's no criteria to apply. If you try to be a NASA astronaut, if anybody knows anything about it, it is so strict and high level that it's literally the 1% of the 1% who can actually apply. Space hero takes away all those borders in the first place. You have to have a level of English, because that is the language in space. And you have to be over 18, because that's the international law to go into space. But pretty much anybody can apply and be part of the process. And that in itself, when you think about people who have been to space, to what the Space Hero stands for, you're already cutting down borders and boundaries and criteria.
And we will find compassionate leadership in a process. It will reveal itself, right? As much as the last president has revealed himself as not being that, right? Could people have known? Of course they could have, but really, you know, the good thing about Americans is always that they like to give people chances, right? It's a very non-prejudiced, is that the right word? Prejudiced country. And I always liked that about America. And in this case, you know, the chance was there, and of course it was blown in a massive way. But for us, it's gonna be similar throughout the process, right? People have the chance to introduce themselves and then show who they really are. It starts with the second part of the word, space hero, because the hero portion is defined today as kind of a superhero thing. But Space Hero is not about the superhero thing. Space Hero is about being a hero in our definition, which is you do something for somebody else without asking anything in return. And that is what heroes are, right? Be it, you know, taking care of, you know, your family, is it taking care of your neighbors, taking care of other people in, you know, whatever profession you're doing and the service that you are providing, building something, right? As an entrepreneur, you are a natural carer because you're building up a company with people. And the compassion comes out, you know, in those biographies and the reason why you apply. Part of the application process will be that we ask that from people, you know, what are you actually going to say to a global audience when you're sitting on top of the rocket 30 seconds before it blows off, right? It blows off is wrong, blows up, whatever the word is. And so what you say then will be a strong insight in if you have understood what this is. And we have an insider program that we have devised And we had many applications from all over the world. We have decided on 450 people from 58 countries, okay? And the answers that they've given on the on that question is just, it's insane. And I don't want to give away too much, but it surprised us, although we have been dealing with this problem for such a long time. You know, people always surprise you when you put something in front of them. Their creativity makes our program a success. Debs and I, we are just messengers, ambassadors, right, of whatever this is, because this is going to happen anyways. And the compassion will shine loud and clear. The question is then, when you have the 24 ideal candidates, does the bigger compassion win? And what is the winning criteria, right?
That we just had a contest for Compassionate Leaders Awards, and we decided, we had, as suspected, there's so many compassionate leaders like yourselves all over the world that aren't being reported on. You know, we have CNN, we should have CNN for Compassionate News Network instead of Cable News Network, because well, maybe when you're done with this idea, we can get together on that idea. But what we realized is, instead of winners, we had to have representatives of compassion, because there's just so much good, and there's so many people doing great things for the planet and people, and we just need to support that. So I am so excited about your project. I'm very intrigued by co-founders that are actually co, and I think a lot of people could benefit from, how do you make a partnership, a business partnership with such a important vision work? And any tips and philosophies on that would be more than welcome.
Well, I start off there. Sorry. It's like, you know, leave the ego at the door, and believe me, for me, that wasn't easy. but I understood at one point, like 5 years ago, I think probably, that you know, you can only achieve so much when you push your own interests, you know, before others. And as an entrepreneur, you tend to do so, because you're so set on what you want to achieve that you ignore others. But then your success is limited, right? The handful of people that you really can count that have had success with that massively, I mean, it's not many. We always think there are so many successful people on this planet in a big way, but that's actually not true. It's just a few, right? And but the real work is when you build something and you hand it over, and then it takes a life of its own, right? And the organization that Debs and I have built over the past 4 years is a testament of who we are as people. And we have a certain DNA. We are, you know, hustlers in a sense, in a good sense, right? Because we are constantly hustling for this to succeed. We have no problems picking up the phone to anybody and, you know, selling it for the thousandth time. It's not a problem. And we do it because we enjoy it and we love it, right? And the second thing is that being of both major genders, right? Let's put it that way. We cover a lot of insights, right, into the other person's world. And we are forced by working together with the same responsibility for the company to listen to each other. And that, because Debs can't make a decision without me, and vice versa, I can't make a decision without her too. And we have a process, right, when it comes to a moment where we can't agree, which is quite rare, and we never had to pull on that specific process ever. But if we have to, right, then one of the first steps is to reverse roles, which means you have to understand what the other person wants and have to convince somebody else to go for that. And again, you know, it's a matter of communication and decision making, which is awesome. And, you know, this is, we look into these mechanisms. We are friends, of course, first and foremost, right? There was a reason why Debs and I, you know, came together for this project. She's a partner here because she is fearless and she has a global outlook. And all these things are so important, right? It's like the world is global. The pandemic has brought it home so strongly, right, that every challenge that we face is a global challenge that needs a global solution. Forget nations. I mean, who talks about nations? And I'm so happy that the kids and everybody's using their mobile phone as the big equalizer. And, you know, it's what it is. It makes the world truly global. And, you know, Debs knows that, and how I knew her from the past, I knew that she knows that. And that's why we work so well together.
And we also have really different skills. You know, Thomas and I very naturally, as you can tell here, I'm maybe more of an extrovert and Thomas is more of a thinker. But both the qualities that we have in the opposite side actually created the perfect CEO. And I actually don't think that it's possible for one person from one part of a gender, I don't know how you want to describe it, but to actually have two people, a man and a woman, who have very strong ideals and the intention is always the same. We want this to succeed. We want to be able to give back to our communities. We want to be able to do that on a global level. But we have different ways of looking at things, but we really have come together. And I mean, I'd be really interested one day when this is kind of, you know, season one is over, for you to actually interview some of the executives. Maybe they think it's terrible having two bosses. But maybe not. I think probably not.
Well, I think whether we like it or not, we're shifting. We have to shift into collaborative leadership. My stance is everyone is a leader, and leaders' jobs is to help empower all their stakeholders to be leaders, right? Sure. Whether it's a vendor, an employee, a boss, a client, someone who's a contestant on a reality show, our job is to help everyone be their best. And I love that you're a strong example of two friends, different backgrounds, different countries, different genders, different races coming together and making this work. I've seen a lot of people try to do co-leadership and fail. So I'm really curious. So you said if you do come up against conflict, that your backup plan is to reverse roles and talk it through from the other side. Have you ever had to do that? That's just a mechanism that
You find it funny, Laura, because we even fixed it in our partnership agreement.
So it's actually people around us that said, you need to have this in the contract. And they're right. I mean, we've been friends for such a long time. He can finish my sentences. We pretty much know our social limitations together, but we also understand our professional limitations, and we always have each other's back. Even if I absolutely disagree, that is for Thomas and I to figure out. It never gets permeated anywhere else, because we are a unit, and we are the ones who basically have our names on the door. So everybody else, you know, if this fails, it ain't you, it ain't them, it's us. And we take that responsibility very seriously, which is why we won't fail.
Yeah. Well, I also love that you're friends, and I think the reality is, in the workspace, we find spouses, we find friends, we have deep relationships. And I think work and life is one big soup and can't be really separated. I think there's a lot of people holding on to this old idea that, you know, I can't work with my friends, and I can't, you know, I work with family, friends, you know, I tell my nephews that work with me as interns, I'm not going to be the aunt that fires you, but you can take a break if you want to. I'm curious, like, how much time do you guys spend together, and how do you weave more times, together?
More time than our current partners, that's for sure.
Yeah, that's for sure. We're getting, you know, since the pandemic, we've gotten a couple of eyes, right? Because before that, we were traveling quite a lot. But now it's like you're at home and you still don't have time. That's bad. But, you know, we spend quite the significant time together. Starts in the morning. We get up quite early, and then we go through the day on calls, on, you know, working through documents, communication, financials, all this kind of stuff. And the weekend as well, because, I mean, you know, this is the moment.
What's the weekend?
Yeah, what's the weekend? This is the moment now, right? If you don't make it happen now and stay with it, right, then it's not going to, you know, it will move forward with other people, but we're not going to be part of it, which would be sad, right?
And how do you take care of yourselves as leaders? And how are you compassionate with yourself?
I would like to take this one first, because somebody said to me when things started to get crazy, But what do you do to look after yourself, Deborah? And I said, well, I shower and brush my hair every day. And then I thought, shit, that doesn't sound very good at all. I sound like a complete moron. But Laurel, I have for a very long time been always interested in my health. So I actually, every week for many, many years, I have a massage. And not only does it feel good, I also train heavily. I'm always training. I'm always trying to lose that extra 10 pounds, get more muscles. So I'm always active. I have, as I said, two dogs. So they go on a 5K hike with me pretty much every morning. But really the times that I have, you really nailed it by saying no longer do you cut yourself off between this 9-to-5 paradigm. It's gone. That is gone. If I'm up at 6, which is about normal for Thomas and I, the first thing we normally do is check in with each other. And then you have to consider that, the paradigm of doing something you're not passionate about, I couldn't even imagine that. So, okay, work is excitement and it's passion and it's a good intention. How do you look after yourself? You have that. You have that automatically. When you do something you love and you do something for the right reasons, you're automatically looking after yourself and that ripples to everybody else. But showering and brushing your hair is also good.
In the age of Zoom calls, I think it's critical.
You know, I have UGG boots on and in the summer I was in a bikini, but with a shirt on. In the winter, it's UGG boots and pajamas.
Well, you look great. You look great. But I appreciate that you exercise and eat your vegetables from your farm. And Thomas, what do you do to take care of yourself?
Sleep. So it's actually true. It's the one thing that I discovered in the pandemic year. My partner and I would just go to bed at 8-9 p.m. and we just sleep for 8-9 hours.
Yeah.
And that's good. And you can still be awake at 6, right? Which is fantastic. Then the sun comes up and the day starts. If you would have asked me decades ago, there wouldn't have been anything that I've been doing to take care of myself. You fly too much, you drink too much, the time zones. And it's the havoc that we have wrecked on our bodies is just amazing. And we only found out this year because we didn't do that.
Right.
And that is quite the discovery, right? It's and we have, Debs and I, we have decided that in the future for the company travel, we will change that. So we will rather do longer stints at one place, right? If we have to go there, than all the short-term travel that we did. And we were on a plane every week and that cannot continue.
Yeah. Well, I'm glad you're taking better care of yourselves because your vision is very important. And now that we've talked, we're friends. So I want you to take good care of yourself. What would you like my readers and listeners to know about how they can get involved?
Cool.
Support you.
It's easy because we're not public yet. So we are pre-launch, but today until the end of the year before we actually launch, they can become Space Hero Insiders. And it's as simple as going onto our website. It's actually not really a website, it's only a landing page, spacehero.me. And it says, put in your email address. They put in an email address, they automatically get a note back from us the following day. That is a more of a longer application form that can be filled out. And as an insider, they get to know kind of stuff before behind the scenes, before the sort of consumers get to hear about it, because we haven't launched. And this is a way, Thomas alluded, that we started this not by mistake, but from necessity from the Deadline article, which was business. We didn't think people would be coming to the website because it's not even a website, it's a landing page. And we had 6,500 people come to our website. We were like, okay, we've got to do something with this. And so we said, okay, well, let's test out the theory of the application while we are getting this amount of traffic. And about 10% of those people who came onto the landing page went on to the Space Hero Insiders program. And as Thomas said, we've had 458 people from 53 countries fill out the documentation that takes a minimum, and it's got a disclaimer, of 30 minutes. Mm-hmm. So people don't even watch TV for goddamn 30 minutes. I mean, we were were like shocked, but these people are so passionate. They are so excited about this show, and they come from every walk of life. Thomas's examples in the beginning about the girl from Nepal and the guy from Nigeria, these are real people that we have met. Thomas and I did something that probably is compassionate, but also really, really great for us as leaders and also for this project. Those 458 people, Earl, we spent 5 minutes individually with every single nice. One of them. 5 minutes with the founders, that's what we called it. I mean, we were doing like 17 calls a day for 3 weeks, 4 weeks. It was nuts. But we got to meet some of the most incredible people in the world. I met the only Space Hero insider from Cameroon. There's not even a space agency there. And this girl had the light of, she was so happy. She was could not thank us enough. We met people from Kuwait, women from Saudi Arabia, like fishermen from Japan. I mean, there were some amazing people that are all different walks of life that want to be part of this. And you know what? We are the platform, and that's what's going to happen.
Fantastic. Anything else, Thomas, you want to say about how people can get involved or anything else you want to say about the project?
You said, I think we didn't touch on it, you asked how we see this unfolding. And I think you know what the vision for it is, and I think that's worth talking about because, of course, it's not a one-off. You don't set this up as a one-off. You set this up for a longer story. So we have envisioned, you know, 15 seasons, 30 years of this because the constellation, right, doesn't stop at one Space Hero going up to the station. At one point, you know, you will have the first couple going up to the station. You will have the first family going up to the station with kids, okay? There's never been a kid to space. Can you imagine? Kids are so interested in that, you know, when those kids come back and report, people will just go nuts. We want to go to the moon as Space Hero. We want to be part of the first Mars mission as Space Hero. And always state the example that Debs mentioned in the beginning. For us, space is a mirror that we take a look in and understand what kind of challenges we also face on Earth, but in a condensed way, right? So we have to look at this and understand how we can survive, and then we will survive better here and have a better life.
I'm thrilled to have met you. I'm thrilled about your project. I'm thrilled to support you in any way I can. So say the website again. Deborah?
www.spacehero.me.
As a daughter of someone whose life was transformed because my dad was a poor kid on the south side of Chicago, and he came back from serving in the Navy, and he was a Maytag repairman. He was always very mechanical. And he answered a blind ad, come be part of the future with us. And he went and took a test, and he was recruited to work for IBM and worked first to actually monitor radar from Russia, and then worked on the Apollo program, testing computers for the Apollo program for his career. So I certainly know how underprivileged people can be, worlds can change. My entire family changed because my father went from being blue collar to white collar through technology and eventually space. So I'm so thrilled that we met through Kismet, and I'm so excited to continue to talk to you and follow you and support you. Thank you for your time today.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to the Compassionate Leaders podcast. You can learn more about us at CompassionateLeadersCircle.com. Please join us each week as we shine a light on compassionate leaders making a positive impact on their communities and the world.